So tonight, as always, it'll be two shilas. By the way, this is our last year until after Yontif, I think. Next week at this time, we'll be breaking our fast. In 2 weeks at this time, we'll be breaking our fast. And so after Sukkot, we'll be back. But okay, so let's discuss two shilas, or one shilah, but you'll tell me which one. So shilah number one, I got the following email. Hi, Rabbi Leibowitz. My daughter has a female dog. Now, here's where it's going to get confusing. There's a daughter and there's a female dog. Going forward, they are both she or her or whatever. So you got to figure out which is the daughter. Okay. So my daughter has a female dog, and for many years, she, I assume the daughter, has requested of me to get her, I assume the dog, spayed. Right? Okay, that's a good assumption. I have until now resisted, though, because of halachic concerns. Every time she goes to the vet, that could be either one of them, she is warned that the dog will potentially become very ill. That, I assume, is the daughter. The daughter is warned that the dog will become potentially very ill if she is not spayed soon. Dog. It's like, what do they call it? Mad Libs? We have given her hormone shots, but that is not a long term solution. Again, I assume that's the dog. I'm very concerned that if something were to happen to the dog, okay, this time he was careful, because of this issue, it would very much negatively affect her. I think that's the daughter. She's an at-risk 17-year-old, I assume the daughter, and has struggled with different aspects of Yiddishkeit over the years. I assume both. In addition, her biological father, again the daughter, I assume, passed away when she, the daughter, was 4 years old, and is something that she still deals with at times. Please let me know what is halachic path that we can follow in this issue. So, okay, so you're leaving out all of the other confusion. The question was that he has a daughter, a stepdaughter, it seems, who struggles with Yiddishkeit a lot, and the daughter owns a dog, and which now became a very Jewish thing. A lot of people own dogs now. It used to be it was not a very Jewish thing, and COVID came, and everyone got their COVID dogs. But the daughter wants to get the dog spayed because that's a responsible thing to do when you're a pet owner. Problem is, it's an issur d'oraisa to neuter an animal or a person. So the question is, what do you do about that situation? So that is shaila number one. Shaila number two, from a Talmud of mine, I got a WhatsApp that reads as follows. Hi, Rebbe. Nice seeing you last night at the wedding. This was a little while back. Question for you. My wife and I were listening to a shiur about the halacha surrounding childbirth. And one of the things mentioned was that although there is a segula for people to bring a copy of the Noam Elimelech into the delivery room, one should not do so. Is this true? We have my grandfather's Noam Elimelech, which he gave to my mother, which we were planning on bringing with us into the delivery room. So the shaila is there some sort of problem with bringing a Noam Elimelech into the delivery room? So that is shaila number two. One of these two shailas has a Rosh Hashanah connection. Can you guess which one?
Probably the
childbirth one. That's correct. Okay, so by a show of hands, all those who would like to talk about neutering a female pet for a female daughter, raise your hand. All those who would like to talk about bringing a Noam Elimelech into the delivery room. Okay, so we got the Noam Elimelech. You waited to see like, what they did over there. All right, so okay, so let's discuss. So first of all, what? Noam Elimelech into, have, by a show of hands, another show of hands, how many of you have heard of the idea of bringing a Noam Elimelech into the delivery room? Like, not the actual Noam Elimelech, the safer. Noam Elimelech into the delivery room? You ever heard of that? I had never heard of that, but apparently, if you Google it, it's a thing that that people do. They bring a copy of the Sefer, again, not the actual Noam Elimelech, Sefer Noam Elimelech. My father-in-law insists that one time, I don't believe this story is true, but my father-in-law insists that when he was in Rav Soloveitchik's year once, Rav Soloveitchik sent a boy out to go get a Gemara Nida. And he said, go out and get me a nida. And the boy walked in just as a woman from the office had walked into the room. And he insists, Rav Soloveitchik said, I meant the Gemara nida, you idiot. Okay, but there's no way that story is true. Like it's not shaykh. Okay, but so the Noam Elimelech, the Sefer, into the Duvi room. So first of all, a little bit about the Noam Elimelech. Who was Noach Elimelech? The Noam Elimelech. So the following is from the internet, and everything the internet says is true, so we know that all this is true. Rav Elimelech of Lugansk was born in 1717. He died in 1786. He came from a small town, and his parents were charitable people and were merchants. They had seven sons. Two of them became famous Hasidic rebbes, Rav Meshulam Zusha and Rav Elimelech of Lugansk. And even as young boys, they were totally engaged in Torah study, in Nigla, in Nistar, the Kabbalah Harizal, and they went into a self-imposed galus, going from town to town, teaching people Torah, and they became very attracted to the Hasidic movement, and they became Talmidim of the Magid of Mezrich. And Rav Elimelech of Lugansk became one of the leading figures in the Hasidic movement, and he fully developed the idea of making the personality of the tzaddik the focal point of a chassid's existence, because a tzaddik has the mission to give life to all the worlds by virtue of his divine soul. And in Noam Elimelech, he talks about that idea. That's and Noam Elimelech became like one of the basic foundational texts of Hasidus. He had many great Talmidim, such as the Chayzim Lublin, the Kuznetzer Magid, and Rav Menachem Mendel Miriminov, and the Apter Rav, and Rav Salisir Rapshitz, many very chashev Hasidish Talmidim that the Noam Elimelech had. So he was a very great man, and he was very admired by his Talmidim and by Hasidim ad hayom hazeh, and he had three sons as well and a couple of daughters. Fine, that's the Noam Elimelech in a nutshell according to the internet. Now, what does it have to do with childbirth, and why in the world would you bring a Noam Elimelech into the delivery room, and is there any halachic problem with it? So first let's discuss maybe some of the common childbirth segulos. As you may surmise, women sometimes get nervous, and their husbands also, about childbirth. It's traditionally, it was a very dangerous time, and now, thank God, with the miracles of modern medicine, it's less dangerous. I just saw in the Yeshiva World News that a couple of YU guys delivered a baby on last night in the flood on the highway somewhere. You know, Hatzalah of Riverdale and Hatzalah of Washington Heights joined forces to deliver a baby. So you know, you could deliver a baby in a flood on the whatever, on the Henry Hudson Parkway. So nowadays, you know, thank God, the infant mortality rate and the mortality rate during childbirth is very, very, very low. And but you can imagine, still a time, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva where he discusses inducing labor. He said it's still a time that's viewed as inherently dangerous, and women bench gomel after childbirth. It's something that's considered to be an inherently dangerous time. So you can imagine that people are looking for spiritual aid, you know, something that can sort of give them a little sense of comfort, and various types of skulas. So what are the common skulas for an easy labor? So, and you know, anyone know? I guess you guys aren't holding there yet, but common skulas? So psicha, that we see in shul, right? Someone, the husband gets psicha throughout the ninth month. That's something that you find in some svarim. A lot of the rabbanim are not so happy about that. It's really got nothing to do with childbirth and whatever. But okay, that's one of the common segulas that they have. Another common segula, the Achronim write, the Kav Chaim quotes, the Yerchas Chaim also, that being makbin and sudas m'lava malka is a su'uda not to have a difficult labor. And that's based on the idea that the su'uda is a kiyum of the etzem haloz, of the loz bone, and the because the klala of the etzem tel dibanim came because of the chet etzadas, meaning the klala of of pain in childbirth came as a result of the Eitz Hadas, and that bone was not nene from the Eitz Hadas, and therefore was not part of the kanas of the Eitz Hadas. So whatever you could do to strengthen that loose bone that gets nourished by the Malava Malka, that's going to fortify the woman in childbirth, because it's not going to affect her in childbirth. That's the svara. That's what they say. There's a well-known custom relating to an esrog. Anyone know about the custom relating to the esrog? To bite off the pitum of the esrog to save from childbirth. Where does that come from? So, you know, and there are all sorts of variations that mean only on Hoshana Rabbah. No, you could even make esrog jelly. You could do it whenever, whatever the various forms of that are. What's that based on?
Okay.
So, are you going to say another one?
What about Mishnah
and Shabbos? Oh, we'll get there also. So, but the Esrog one, Mistama, comes from the idea that there's a machlokas in Chazal what the Eitz Hadas was. One possibility is that the Eitz Hadas was an Esrog. So she takes the part of the Esrog that has no taste and she says, look, I'm not even getting Hana from the Eitz Hadas anymore. The sin of the Eitz Hadas gave me no Hana, and therefore I shouldn't have to suffer the consequences. There are some that are makbit to make challah, so that they could do the mitzvah of Afrashas Challah. And that relates to what you were talking about, that there are three commandments that are associated specifically with women, need the challah v'adlakas haner, and failure in those areas, nashim mesos b'shas leidasan. So in order to avoid mesos b'shas leidasan, they're going to be extra zahir in need the challah v'adlakas haner. The nida part of it, well, how is a pregnant woman supposed to be zahir in nida? She doesn't become a nida. She stops bleeding when she's pregnant. So there are those that have the practice of going to the mikvah during the ninth month, even though they're not a nida, that, as a way of having an easy childbirth. Whatever these practices are, these are all skulas, and the question is, by any skula, to what extent is it a violation of superstition? Meaning that when the Torah was given, the world didn't know very much about science, and there was a lot of superstition in the world. Yet the Torah prohibits lo sanachshu, lo sonenu. You're not allowed to practice superstitions in Isser in the Torah. What is it? What does nichush mean? What's lo sonenu? What are these isurim? So nichush means something that happens, and a person takes it as a simon that he should or should not do something, even if b'derech hateva it makes no sense. Meaning he says, oh, if the next car down the street is red, then that's a sign that I'm supposed to invest in a stock that's ticker symbol is RED or something. I don't know if there's such a thing, but you know, he takes something that makes no sense, it has no bearing on the decision that you're making, but you take that as a sign. You made up your own sign, you made up the language that you think God talks to you, and you take that as a sign of what you're supposed to do. So that is, if I wear my lucky jersey, then my team is going to win, but if I wash it, then my team is not going to win. You know, like you make up whatever deals you make with yourself. So in the Gemara, they had such a concept that they would say to a child, psokli psukech. They would tell the child, tell me what pasuk you just learned, and they would take the response as a simon min hashamayim. The child would say a pasuk, and they would say, oh, that's a simon that we're supposed to do. So that sounds a lot like l'sanachshu. So that's what the Achronim write, that there's a difference between doing it with Torah Shebichsav and anything else. Now with Torah Shebichsav, there's a way to receive messages using Torah Shebichsav, and that's the concept called Goral Hagra, right? You've heard of the concept of Goral Hagra. They say Rav Aryeh Levine, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, identified several dozen bodies, after one of the wars, using Goral Hagra. Goral Hagra was done not only by Hasidim, was done by a lot of tzaddikim and gedolim. They say Rav Aaron Cutler, I don't know if this story is true, but they say when Rav Aaron Cutler was deciding whether he should go where his father-in-law was, Rav Issa Zalman was in Eretz Yisrael, or whether he should go to America, that he did a Goral Agra, and he found the pasuk of Hashem telling Aaron to go greet Moshe in the Midbar, and America was referred to by all of European Jewry at the time as a Midbar, and the other Gadol in America at the time was Rav Moshe Feinstein, so he was going to greet Moshe in the Midbar. Then he took that as a sign that he should go. I don't know if that's a true story or not. It's probably not for several reasons, but that's a story that they say. So the Rishonim discuss why isn't it nichush, and the Rishonim say because Torah Shebichsav is different. So Rav Shachter often points out, yeah, but that's only by Torah Shebichsav. You're not supposed to like take a novel off the shelf and say, oh, whatever page I open up to, I'm going to follow the instructions that it says. And he says, Hu Adin, if you're a chassid of a particular Rebbe and you don't have access to the Rebbe anymore, let's say, to have a conversation with him, maybe he's too busy, maybe his chassidus got too big, maybe he's not seeing people anymore, or maybe he's no longer alive, and you want to take the letters that he wrote, and you open up to a page in the letters, and you think that the Rebbe is talking to you by opening up the letters. That's l'chora, l'chora, and yeah, I get in trouble every time I say this because people get upset about this. But that Rav Shechter, not me, Moreno Rav Shechter said that's l'chora, a violation of lo sinachshu. Now on Rosh Hashanah, we also seem to violate Lo Sinachshu, right? What do? We have this practice that we eat various simanim. So what does the siman say? Oh, because I'm eating a date, so a tamar, so yitamu sonenu. Because I'm eating a rimon, I'm eating a pomegranate, so sheyir b'zuchu yosenu k'rimon, or ruvya sheyir b'zuchu yosenu. We have all these tfilos that we assume, because I'm eating this fruit, or this weird thing that I don't normally eat, so now, because of what it's called, it should be a zchus or a skula that all these wonderful things should happen to us. So Rav Shechter often quotes that the Nesivos in one of his Svarim in Nachlas Yaakov, sometimes he just quotes it as Nesivos, people turn the Nesivos upside down looking where in the Nesivos when you talk about it, it's in Nachlas Yaakov, it's in one of his more obscure Svarim. So he raises this question and he points out based on the Ramban Al HaTorah says that when a Navi issues a nevuah, sometimes to give a little oomph to the nevuah, there's a poel dimyon that goes along with the nevuah, that the Navi has to sort of like act something out along with the nevuah. He makes some sort of demonstration along with the nevuah. So just as the nevuah becomes stronger with a poel dimyon, perhaps the same is true with tefillah, that a tefillah with a poel dimyon makes it a stronger tefillah, but the ikar is the tefillah. I mean, people think that the ikar is eating the fruit. No, the ikar is the yehi ratzon. You say the yehi ratzon, that's the tefillah, and if acting it out and eating something inspires you to say a more heartfelt yehi ratzon, so then great, and that's what we should do, and that's how the Nesivos explains the idea of simanim Rosh Hashanah. What's losa aneinu? Losa aneinu means that we shouldn't think that there are lucky times or unlucky times other than what we have a mesorah of Chazal from, right? Mishnah chasad matin b'simcha, Mishnah chasad marbin b'simcha, but you shouldn't think that Friday the 13th is a particularly dangerous day or something like that. And Mukhe Yosef quotes a minhag to schedule a wedding at the beginning of the month when the moon is getting bigger, because that's a simin that the love of the chasan and the kala should grow just as the moon is getting bigger. And he says, he quotes those who say that it's usher to be makbid about that, because it's also an angel, that you can't be makbid to definitely get married at a particular time of the month. But ultimately, Mukhe Yosef writes in Sanhedrin that it's mutter, because no one thinks that that's going to make the chasan and kala happier. It's a simin tov, it's a good simin. Why does a kala wear a white dress? No matter what she's done in her past, does that purify her when she wears white? No, it's a symbol to say, it's like an announcement. Look, she's pure and pristine, like a kala basula. So that's, she wears a white dress. It doesn't actually change anything, but it's appropriate. It's an appropriate type of symbol of simon. But it doesn't mean that one has to do that. In fact, in the Rebbetzin Meiselman biography of the Soloveitchik family, she printed a copy of the invitation to Rav Moshe and Rebbetzin Soloveitchik's wedding, Rav Soloveitchik's parents' wedding. By the way, Rav Soloveitchik's parents are buried in Queens. You could visit Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's kever, along with many, many other gedolim, like in Queens, like right here. It's unbelievable how many kivrei tzaddikim we have, and they're mamish all within like 10 feet of each other. You can find Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and Rav Shlomo Hyman and the Meitzer Eloy and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and just unbelievable. The Nezer HaKodesh and the Rav David Leibovitz, Rav Henoch Leibovitz, like unbelievable number of tzaddikim. But anyway, so in they printed the wedding invitation, and on the wedding invitation it's clear they got married at the end of the month. Oh, how could they get married at the end of the month? You're supposed to get married at the beginning of the month? No, you're not supposed to be makvid about such things, but it's a nice simon if you can, if it works out with the schedule. But there's another issue over here, right? The issue over here with using the Noam Elimelech, or really any sefer for that matter, is there is the Rambam in Hilchos Avodas Chavim Perek Yud Aleph Halach Yud Beis. Let me read you the Rambam and you tell me what you think. Says the Rambam, Halochesh ala maka v'korei pasuk min haTorah. If a person is has an injury, and in order to cure himself, he says a pasuk from the Torah as a way of saying like an incantation on the injury. V'chena korei ala tinok shlo yivat, where a child feels it seems that the baby is scared of something, he's crying, so you say psukim to calm him, to soothe him. Haminiach sefer Torah. O tefillin ala katan b'shvil sheyishan, or you take a sefer Torah or tefillin and you put it together with the child to help the child sleep. Lo daila and shein b'chal chavar m'nachshim. Not only is that a violation of los enachshu, ela shehein b'chal akofrim b'torah. That's Ram's lashon. Ram was careful with lashon normally. Shein osin divrei Torah refuas guf. Because you're turning the Divrei Torah into Refuas Guf, ve'ein another Refuas Nefashos. And Divrei Torah is really supposed to be Refuas Nefashos. Shemar v'yu chayim l'nafshcha. Aval abari, but if a healthy person, shakar p'sukin o'mizmer mitilim, k'dei shatagin lov z'chus kriyasan, says Tehillim in order to use, that the z'chus of learning the Tehillim, of saying the Tehillim, should be a protection, v'yinatzel mitzaros v'nizakim, harei ze mutter. That's going to be mutter to do. So the Rambam is based on Gemara and Shavuos, Tavtas Vavim Beis. Problem is, as Rav Asher Weiss points out, what in the world is everyone so mechan? Everyone says Tehillim for sick people. The Rambam makes sound like you're not even allowed to say Tehillim for sick people. You're only allowed to say Tehillim when you're healthy to not become sick. You ever get that email from the shul? Massive Tehillim gathering, urgent, everyone should come because everyone's healthy now. So now's the time, right? You never get that. It's only when someone is deathly ill and they need an urgent Tehillim. That's when you get the urgent Tehillim. It's against the Rambam. Furthermore, Rav Asher Weiss points out that if you look in any typical Sefer Tehillim, it will tell you, say this kapitel for this and that kapitel for that, and what do you do when there's a chola? You take kuf yutes and you spell out the chola's name, and these psukim spell out his name, and that's gonna and apparently this is an old practice in many of the Sefer Tehillims. Rav Asher Weiss points out that these segulos about Sefer Tehillim are based on the Sefer called Shimush Tehillim that was originally printed in the year Shin Yud Beis. Tav Shin Yud Beis? No, Shin Yud Beis, meaning they're going way back. And there are those that associate the origins of that Sefer with Rav Haigon. The Chida quotes that Sefer in Shema Gedolim, and he says it's a wonderful Sefer. And he says in the name of the Rashba that the Sefer was Mekubal from all the Gedolim. So, and the Chida himself arranges Psukim based on the Osios of the Aleph Beis from Tehillim. So it sounds like there's some massive tradition of doing this against what the Rambam tells us explicitly that you're not allowed to do. So we don't find anyone that like explicitly, at least that I know of, straight out argues on the Rambam. But from the Rashba and the Truvin, Chilgal Simtov Yud Gimel, it sounds like he's not exactly on the same page of the Rambam. He says at least there's what to discuss in terms of these issues. And certainly the Me'iri we find in a number of places is a little more makel. So Rav Asher Weiss has his own taich of the Rambam, we're not going to get into right now, but he also has a list of exceptions to this prohibition. He says, first of all, Tosus raises the question based on the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara says that for a fever, you should say Vayar Melech Hashem, Vayar Melech Hashem Elav. So for a fever, you say a particular pasuk. What do you mean for a fever? You're not allowed to say any pasuk. You're not allowed to say a pasuk for a refuah. They're not supposed to be refuahs. So Tosus says, no, Mishum Sakana, it's mutter. Meaning if the fever is so bad that it's Sakana, then all bets are off. For a Sakana, you're allowed to do this. So that's one exception. So if it's Makam Sakana, perhaps according to Tosus, it's mutter. The Marsha, so interesting. The Gemara in Erev and Dalet. Erev and Dalet is where we have a lot of the Kabbalah Satorah stuff, a lot of the stuff about Talmud Torah. So in Erev and Dalet, the Gemara says, Hachosh Perosho, you ever hear the phrase? Chosh Perosho? Yasuk b'Torah. If you have a headache, you know what you should do? Go learn Torah. Right? Most people leave the base medrash when they have a headache. They want to go take a nap. No, chash perosho, yasuk b'Torah. You should go. Learn Torah. So I think they say that someone said that it was either of Shlomo Zalman or of Nevinsal. Came out the same already, right? You know, in order to miss the Dan Huggles, but that someone said, I have a headache, I'm not able to learn. And they said, if either Rosh Hashanah or Rav Nevinsal, if I didn't learn every time I had a headache, then I would never have learned. You know, like, Chash Perosho, Yasuk B'Torah. So you're also in Torah. So the Marsha asked the question, What do you mean? You're not supposed to be osik in Torah in order to cure a headache. So pashtus is not what it means. It doesn't mean you're doing it to cure a headache. It means that you know, to get your mind off things and to and that you have to learn anyway. Even if you're chash barosho, you have to learn. But the Masha says, how are you allowed to use divrei Torah to cure yourself? So he says maybe the issur of divrei Torah is only if you're not learning in the normal manner and you're learning as a cure to the illness. But if you're learning in the normal manner and you happen to not be feeling well and it happens to have that side effect of curing your illness, okay, that's great. Or maybe chash barosho yasu b'torah is not to get it to cure your headache, but to make it not get worse. And preventative is mutter, like we said before. I don't know. Marsha has these different answers. The chinuch in mitzvah tavkuf yud beis tells us that he, the chinuch is a sefer he wrote for his son. He said that he noticed that children were bored on Shabbos afternoon, so they needed something to do. So he wrote the chinuch was anonymously authored. Probably by the Ra'ah, I think they say, but it was authored for children so that they could have something to do on Shabbos afternoon. You know, they hadn't invented ping pong tables yet, so he wrote the Sefer HaChinuch instead. And so he addresses his son at certain points. He says, "V'ulai b'ni tiksha alai, my son, you might have a question you're going to ask that you're not allowed to that it says in certain places, certain psukim that you're supposed to say." And yet you're not allowed to have a refuah from Divrei Torah. So he says, if the psukim that you say inspire you to real avodas halev, that's what it's really all about. That's okay. It's just to use the psukim as the cure, that's what you're not allowed to do. There are other exceptions of Asher Weiss quotes as well. Lemaisa, it doesn't seem that any of them really work over here. Because over here you're not learning at all. Right? What are you doing? You're taking a sefer Noam Elimelech and you're bringing it into the delivery room. Right? You look and they say, some hold that it's only if you take a first edition Noam Elimelech. It's like $200,000 for a first edition Noam Elimelech. If you take a first edition Noam Elimelech, you bring that into the delivery room and you put it under the woman's pillow. So I was sure when I told the guy, look, I'll ask Rav Shechter, you know, it's a family heirloom, I don't want to get in the way of your family traditions or whatever. I'm like, he's not going to like this, you know. Like, so I asked Rav Shechter. He always surprises me. So Shechter said, he said, first he told the story that I knew he would tell, that when he was a little boy growing up in Philadelphia, he said there was a man in the shul who had a daughter who was very sick, and the man was an Amaretz, he didn't know anything, and he was talking to some of his friends. He used to be like right post-war generation, like right after the Holocaust. People from the same town used to get together all the time. My grandfather would tell me about this. My grandfather, should live and be well, tells me sometimes that, like, Rav Menashe Klein used to come to the Ungvar gathering sometimes. You know, my grandfather's from Ungvar, so, you know, Rav Menashe Klein would come, Elie Wiesel sometimes, you'd have a celebrity sighting. You know, the chevra from Ungvar, you know, would get together. And so, yeah, they had, like, these get-togethers. So one of the chevra from Landsman, of this guy whose daughter was sick, said to him, you know, from our town, there's like a, one of the kids became like a real Talmud Chacham, and he's like very chashuv now. He said, yeah, who's that? He said, Rav Karelitz, he's a Rav in Israel now. He said, they call him the Chazonish. And he said, who's the Chazonish? Never heard of him. So he said, no, you should really write him a letter and ask him for a bracha. So he wrote a letter to the Chazonish, asked for a bracha for his daughter, and the Chazonish sent back a copy of the Chazonish on Taharos, his newly published Chazanish on Taros, said, put this under your daughter's pillow, and wrote a message of that she should have a refuah shleima. And by the time he got it, the daughter had died already. But the point is that the Chazanish, so the man didn't know what to do. He has a Chazanish on Taros, he doesn't know Aleph Beis, right? So what's he going to do? So he gave it to Rav Melech Shechter, Rav Shechter's father. So that's where Rav Shechter always says that he didn't have many Svarim in his house growing up. His father was a big Talmud Chacham, but an old style Talmud Chacham. Shas, Tanakh, Shulchan Aruch. You know, what else do you need? Right? And that's what he would learn. So Rav Shechter said is that the reason we once asked him, he's always quoting Chazanishes in these obscure places. He said, yeah, because we didn't have any Svarim around the house. So when I was a little boy, he said, I remember when I was in seventh grade, the Rebbe quoted, we learned Baba Kama on Daf Yud Zayin, and, you know, he says we learned a sugi on Baba Kama, and there was a Chazanish that had a whole Mahalikha, and I was the only one. one that knew the whole Mahalik because I was able to look up. No one else had a Chazon Ish. As if, like all the other seventh graders, if they would have had a Chazon Ish, that would have solved the problem. That would have been. But he said, I knew the. I was able to say the Chazon. But so Shach said, Chazon Ish did it. There must be something to it. Perhaps, he said, it's a fulfillment of Kiyem Zeh Masha Kosov Bazeh. That it's like saying that I'm fulfilling what it says over here in this Sefer. Because Gemara in Sota says that Yosef was right next to the Aron, because Kol Masha Kosov Bazeh, Menachem Ba'aron, was Kiyem Zeh. Yosef, the mace, the tzaddik, was in the Kiyem everything it said in the. Okay. So in the Gemara of Kama Daf Yud Zayin says that she knew to say for Torah on the So the okay, this is a little bit distracting. So Rav Shapta thought that it's not it's not the end of the world if you do that, and it must be that there's something to it. I saw in a sefer called a sefer about childbirth in Halacha says that by Rabbi Webster that he writes many of the minhag to place the Noam Elimelech or Raziel Amalech under her pillow. When placing the sefer under the pillow, it's preferable to wrap a sefer in a towel. And in the footnotes, I was like, okay, this is a well footnoted sefer. What's the makar? Kach shamati mikama gedolei achasidim. Okay, so he couldn't find a makar, but he said he heard that the Admar Misatmer Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha Hayinosin Sefer Noam Elimelech L'Shmir L'Misha Sha'avar Nituach Ritzini. That if anyone had a serious surgery, the Satmar Rabbi used to give him a Noam Elimelech to keep in his room with him, and that apparently has some sort of protective power. The final word I came across, Rav Asher Weiss in one of his weekly shiurim wrote that he says it's a minhag that a lot of people put a Noam Elimelech under a Yoled. This is a pillow. He says, "V'davar pelari isi b'shiure harav baruch ber mikamenitz shenitfas la'achrona u'bagdom l'sefer." In the shiurim of baruch ber, in the akdom it says, "Shepam echad tziva laniach ha'sefer beis aron tachas rosho shalchola b'skizkula." So you see, it didn't only come from the Hasidic world. The idea of putting a sefer under the head of a chola in some way, Rav Baruch Ber and the Chazon Ish. So Rav Asher Weiss points out, l'chol. Asr Lassos came because it's Domel Mashkas of a Rambam that you're not allowed to put a Sefer Torah Tefillin on Mitas Tinok L'chor Huad Din V'Huad Tam in this situation. So who am I to pass judgment? I don't know, but it seems that this is a minhag that Gedolim had, even though from a strict halachic view of it, it seems highly, highly problematic. But if it's a minhag that Gedolim had, it's hard to tell someone who has a tradition in his family not to do it. I don't know if the Noam Elimelech ever made it into the delivery room, but Baruch Hashem, the Talmud's wife, had a baby and everything worked out just fine. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos and a chesiva tova. Good Shabbos.